with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a busy Sports Thursday as we welcome you into the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. It's MLB opening day. We're tipping off the Sweet 16 later on this evening, and NFL Pro Days with some of the top prospects in the country continue to roll on from coast to coast. Michael, safe to say we are jam-packed yet again today. How are we doing?
We're doing great. I mean, there's no baseball back east, Stormy. I mean, we're going to build an arc fairly soon. There's too much rain here on the East Coast, but eventually we'll get to the Eagles. The Phillies canceled their home opener yesterday. It was supposed to be today, and they knew the weather. So hopefully, you know, Friday we'll have the home openers back here. But, yeah, we got basketball, baseball. It's all the worlds are colliding, and we got NFL draft, workouts, Drake May, everything.
Yep. Unfortunately, like you mentioned, Phillies Braves as well as Mets Brewers, both of those games postponed, but still 13 games on tap beginning at 12 Pacific, 3 Eastern. And as I referenced the Sweet 16, we got hoops, Michael. Four games today, four tomorrow. Any one or two in particular that you are really excited about?
Well, you know, I'm going to love watching Connecticut because I think when you have a great team like that, they kind of teach you a lot about how to maintain competitive stamina, right? I think to me, that's what's so appealing about watching championship teams play is how they handle it, what they do, and how it goes forward. You know, and I think to me, I have Alabama in my Final Four, so obviously I'm interested in how they're going to match up against North Carolina. And, you know, Tate Frazier earlier in the week was in love with Illinois. I'm looking forward to it, to see them. And, of course, you know, I think a lot of this is just good games. I mean, when you go through it, I think San Diego, UConn going through the KenPom is the only game that has, what, an 8-point? He has it as an 8-point game. Everything else is relatively up and down, close within a 5-point radius.
Yeah, that's where he's got it. The odds makers, however, have seen this continue to grow. It opened at 9.5. Now at DraftKings, we're seeing 12. And this is, you know, you imagine both public bettors and people that do this for a living and day-to-day see what this UConn Huskies team is and feel confident that they're going to continue to beat teams at margin. They're 8-0 straight up and against the spread since the start of last year's tournament when it comes to these games in the dance. Have not won a game by fewer than 13 points yet. So we'll see if the Aztecs can ultimately cover that spread today. That Alabama-North Carolina line, by the way, UNC a 4.5-point favorite. High total in that one, 173.5. Let's get to a little football, though, because you talked about pro days. Drake May and Michael Penix Jr. today. We saw Jaden Daniels put his workout together yesterday. And coming out of that workout, Michael, there were a lot of people that said, okay, Jaden Daniels out here showing off a little bit, very complimentary, maybe trying to compete with all that JJ McCarthy hype. But I keep hearing people say that Jaden Daniels, Michael, is their number one quarterback in this class. Are the people that are saying that, do they really believe it? Are they just trying to be different? Like, Caleb Williams has been the guy for the last 2 years that we assumed is going to be the number one overall pick. He's minus 4,000 to go number one. Is any of that Jaden Daniels talk an actual reality, an actual possibility?
No, I don't think it is. I mean, you could just see by the behavior of the Bears that we know where Jaden, we know what's going to happen with Caleb Williams. And Caleb Williams is, I would say, more of a polished player, more well-rounded than Jaden Daniels in the sense that, you know, I think he could play within a West Coast and he could play within a progressive read system. So I think to me, he's got a little bit more where I think Jaden Daniels would really excel is into the high-low game where, you know, he's reading off of a side of the field, read, look, and then use his athleticism to make plays. And, you know, look, I think all these guys, with the exception of Caleb, all these guys and JJ McCarthy because he didn't transfer. But the other four have transferred, and the other four, they have experienced moments where they didn't play well in their school. Daniels, his last year at Arizona State, was not, you know, throws 10 touchdown passes, 10 interceptions. You're not sitting there saying, oh, my gosh, this guy's going to be unbelievable, right? Mm. And then when he goes off to LSU and he kind of finds himself, and next thing you know, now everything's going well. So I think, you know, you have to kind of look at the whole longevity of their careers. Williams has been a better collegiate, and I think he can continue to get better. But Jaden Daniels is still a really good player, and I think he's going to make a team happy. I have a hard time believing he's not the second overall pick in the draft. I really do. I don't see how you can watch all the games and sit there and say, you see more in McCarthy's upside than you see in Daniels' upside.
The odds for the number two overall pick right now, Daniels is an odds on number minus 120, followed by Drake May plus 125 and McCarthy, who we've talked about a lot this week. Odds cut down significantly from 18-1 to now plus 275. And Drake May, who's having his pro day today in Raleigh, because of the, let's call it a polarizing nature of his tape, the highs and lows, the way that he's a perceived faller in this class. How important is what he shows at his pro day today? Like, does he need to nail it to get a pass in the pass fail of pro days? How do you view what he needs to show today?
Well, I think he needs to show more consistency, right? So I think when you look at the 22 tape, you're really kind of impressed. There's games in 22 where you say, that's why the conversation all fall was, could May uproot Caleb Williams for the first pick overall? It was the 22 year. And then as the 23 year came in where he lost a lot of players, it wasn't the same effectiveness that he had. You know, you could see it. I mean, as a redshirt freshman, Stormy, he's the ACC player of the year. I mean, that's a hard thing to accomplish, right? Not even the great Mitchell Trubisky could do that. So, you know, I think you got to take that into account. And then this year wasn't as good. And oftentimes, you know, you build a kind of a portfolio on just, say, certain season when you go back and look at the last year. And I think that's what teams are going to spend more time doing on May, because he's got this unbelievable size. He's almost 6'5". He could be 250 once he grows up. He's right now he's 240 and he's going to get bigger and stronger. We know that. And we know that, you know, as a freshman, he was dynamic, 38 touchdown passes, 7 interceptions. So last year was a setback. And I think this game, this workout, they're looking for consistency, his footwork, his mechanics, his rhythm.
Yeah, the physical tools, no question, as you referenced, they're pretty darn special. And I think, too, people forget as well that not this past season, but the year before, his ability on the ground, he rushed for nearly 700 yards. And even this past season, in terms of rushing touchdowns, had just one rushing touchdown fewer than Jaden Daniels did in that spot. In terms of his odds, like I referenced, plus 125 for him to go number two overall, minus 125 to go three, where he's the favorite in that spot, and 8-1 to go four behind Marvin Harrison Jr. and J.J. McCarthy. Michael Penix Jr. also having his pro day today. He was the Heisman Trophy runner-up in 2023, led Washington to the national championship, and had back-to-back healthy seasons with the Huskies, which was particularly important for him to demonstrate that he could have a full season of health. And that's the biggest question about Michael Penix when it comes to these evaluations is the medical, right? And how much will teams hold that against him in your mind?
Well, it's going to be up to the doctor, right? It's going to be what the doctor grades the knee injuries on and what the longevity is and how he can handle it. Look, as Belichick says, you know, if you tell me the player is going to get hurt on, I'll take him out to play before. Like, you just never know. And it's hard for anybody to judge, you know, right? Drew Brees wasn't supposed to throw another ball the rest of his life after he got hurt in San Diego with his shoulder. The Dolphins failed him on a physical. Next thing you know, he played how many more years in New Orleans? So it's really challenging to really get a good handle on that. But I will say this about Penix. I think Penix is really about where he goes, who coaches him, and the scheme around him. Penix is a home run hitter. I don't think Penix is going to be one of those guys who are going to go 3, 6, you know, 10 play drives. I think he's got that long ball accuracy that is rare to find. And I think ultimately he's going to need to be in the right system, a high-low system, half the field system, where they have outside receivers that he can really rely on to throw the football, because he can make some incredible throws. He really can, and he's deadly accurate down the field. On the third level, he's really good. But there are some times where he loses the strike zone, especially in the short and intermediary game.
Yeah, this setting, though, with your guys, with Rome Odunze being somebody that you're throwing the ball out there to as well, you imagine, like, the ball placement, he's going to put on a show today. And it has been a great two-year stretch for him at Washington. The injury history, two torn ACLs, two different shoulder issues. So how comfortable are teams going to be with that injury history? As far as the odds go for Penix, the Vikings are a plus 250 favorite for that to be his landing spot, followed by the Raiders at plus 320. Seattle Seahawks 4-1, Broncos 5-1, Patriots 7-1. Is there a place, because you talk about the fit being so important, is there a place or a team that you do think would make sense for him? And is he a first round guy to you?
I don't think he's a West Coast offense guy. Yeah, I do think he's a first rounder. I think he could be really dynamic in the Sean McVay offense. you know, the hard play action over routes. That's what he throws at Washington. You know, down the field throws, you know, getting him into some situations where to utilize his ability on the third level, using his foot movement, you know, that kind of thing. You know, it's not, there are variables of the West Coast, and McVay runs a lot more down the field. We see that with Stafford when he throws the ball accurately. I think that's kind of what you need him to be in. I could see him being very effective in that offense.
Michael, do you see any of Joe Milton's pro day clips that went viral yesterday?
I just saw look, here's what I would say about Joe Milton. There was never a doubt he was going to run fast and throw it far, right? That's not going to be his issue. His issue is instinctively, can he play the position in a manner and style that allows consistent execution? And that's really the issue. That's why he got recruited to go to Michigan. That's why he came back to Tennessee. His skill set is elite, elite. It just doesn't show eliteness when he plays the game at the quarterback position, which happens to a lot of guys. This is just not uncommon.
4.5 5.40 at 240 pounds, and he threw the football over them mountains, as Uncle Rico would say in Napoleon Dynamite, because they actually had to move the pro day from the indoor facility to the outdoor because they were afraid that he might hit the ceiling with the way that he was chucking it down. I mean, he's thrown an orange 100 yards before, but 6 years in college football, he's trying to steer GMs away from the actual game film. We got to hit the break. When we come back, one deal did get done in the NFL yesterday, as well as some other big picture draft props to get into.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you haven't been there yet, you gotta head down to Total Wine and More. With so many bottles to choose from, it's so easy to find your favorite. All the lowest prices for over 30 years. You'll find what you love and love what you find at Total Wine and More. Please drink responsibly. Must be 21. Alongside Mike Lombardi, Stormy Bonatoni with you as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line. Coming up in about 20 minutes or so, VSiN's own Mike Somich will join us. Get into a little Sweet 16 action. It's opening day, so maybe he's got an MLB play. Last week, he shocked us with some NHL action, so you never know what you're going to get with Mike Somich. But we'll stick with the NFL here, Michael, where yesterday the Carolina Panthers signed Jadeveon Clowney to a two-year, $20 million contract, max value $24 million. And with Brian Burns gone, Carolina needed somebody, and they go ahead and get Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah, I mean, look, he had such a good year last year, and you always worry about a guy when you sign him to a contract, come an older player with injury history that he had a good year. Can he duplicate that again? But this was a homecoming for Clowney. He wanted to be near his home. I think he wanted to be back in the Carolinas, certainly, and going to Charlotte is something that appealed to him, and obviously, I think ultimately, you know, the Panthers just blew everybody out of the water with this deal. They get a guy that they probably are rationaling behind, saying, look, he had a better year than Burns did last year, had more pressures, could take over the game in a different fashion, and we got him on a two-year deal and didn't have to pay a lot. So you could talk yourself into it. We'll see if he, you know, again, if he could stay healthy and if he plays to the level he played last year in both run and pass. He was good in both areas now. It wasn't like he just came on the field in nickel. Got 9.5 sacks for them. I mean, they got 18.5 sacks out of two players that were unemployed on August the 1st.
Yep. Tied a career high with those 9.5 sacks, 19 quarterback hits, 2 forced fumbles, 43 tackles on what was a $2.5 million prove it deal. He proved it. He got the contract with Carolina. And you referenced going back home. Of course, he is from Rock Hill, which is just outside of Charlotte, went to South Carolina for college, had one of the best college football plays in existence in that Outback Bowl against Michigan, where he pops the running back's helmet completely off and still gets the ball. Just one of the best ever. But yeah, I'm happy for him. After a resurgent year, he's able to get that done. Why do you think that this is the first time in such a long time that he's gotten a deal done this early? We're talking to producer Elliot in the commercial break. Since he left Houston, This is the earliest he's signed a deal. And he's been on 6 different teams now.
Well, I think this is the best year he's had in his career. Highest year in sacks, right? And this is the best he's had. And there was competition. You know, the reason you don't sign before that is because there's no competition. You're trying to get competition. But clearly, I think the Jets wanted to sign him. I think the Jets had interest in him. The Jets are obsessed with replacing Bryce Huff. Why they didn't franchise Bryce Huff, I don't know. They should have kept him. They knew the Eagles were all over him. They were contemplating it. They didn't do it. I think it's going to hurt them in the long haul because they're going to count on some players who maybe aren't as good as Huff to replace them. So, you know, and there were other teams that were probably still kicking tires on Clowney that we don't know about because he was so good last year, and it's hard to find guys that can get to the passer. I mean, look, Chase Young did a one-year deal with New Orleans. Now we know he's got the neck injury, but Young had anywhere near the season that Clowney had last year for them.
And Carolina, a team, as you referenced, certainly needed it, had the fewest sacks and pressures in the entire league a season ago. We are also less than a month away from start of the NFL draft now, and while Chicago is on the clock with that number one overall pick, ain't nobody I know is laying that minus 4,000 for Caleb Williams. I mean, at least I personally don't have the bankroll. Maybe those of you listening out there do. I don't. Therefore, let's look at some other markets, because in addition to who will go picks 1 through 5, DraftKings has odds for which team certain players will be selected by, which position a team will take with their specific pick, and of course the number of position totals that are out there. Michael, in your experience as a former general manager, as somebody in scouting, what's your general strategy for drafting in the first round? Should teams focus more on need, or is it the best player available? What's your preference?
Well, I think you have to bet in the first round. You should try to get what you can't buy in the free agent market, right? You can't find not typically, you can't find defensive linemen in the free agent market, especially big guys who can run. Now, Christian Wilkins made it there, and credit the Raiders for signing him. But it's hard to find those guys. So if there's a defense, like, for example, the Raiders passed up a 3-technique last year to take Tyree Wilson as an edge player. You can always sometimes find edge guys. You can't find 3-techniques. That was a mistake. Same thing with the Bears. They had, you know, same thing with the, with the teams that had an opportunity, the Atlanta Falcons. They're still looking for a 3-technique, and they took another running back. You could have a running back. I'm not saying he'll be as good as Bijan. Probably not. But the difference between the back you get in the third and Bijan is not that much, whereas the 3-technique to the backup to the next 3-technique is significant. So you have to kind of draft what you can't buy in the free agent market. And I think that's really critical. And you want to try to get something that has some rare quality to them, you know, where Carter was exceptional, could take over the line of scrimmage, could dominate a game. And that's what you're trying to hope for. You're hoping to get somebody who can impact the game. And when you get past a certain point in the first round, we're really talking about second round. I know everybody just talks about, I have a first round grade on this guy. Most teams, Stormy, have probably maybe between 16 and 20 players that they have a grade that is worthy of taking in the first round. And that's usually about the number. And then once you get past that, from 21 to 45, you're probably the same level of grade. Now, nobody would believe that because all these other names are coming out there. Oh, my God, how could they take them that early? Well, they're all kind of clustered together. And so I think you that's where you see it. And so when you move around in the draft to get more picks, you're really saying, look, the same guy I'm picking at 27 is the same guy, different position, but the same grade that I'll pick at 42.
So, Michael, let's throw up some of these offensive position totals here quickly. And I'm curious what you've heard from around the league when it comes to the strengths of this year's draft class and if or how it matches up with some of these numbers. In terms of total offensive players to go in the first round, that number sits at 20 and a half. O-linemen, which is supposed to be a particularly talented class, especially at the tackle position, 9.5. Quarterbacks, an intriguing one at 4.5, minus 200 to the over on that one after it was juiced to the under at initial posting. Wide receiver 6.5, running backs over under 0.5. So will there be a running back that goes 1? And we joked on Why Not Wednesday yesterday. You're not taking that 10-1. It's not happening with this batch. But the other positions, what are some of your general thoughts?
Well, I think the quarterback, let's start there. Quarterback at over under 4.5. I think it's going to go over there. I really do. I think that, you know, what you're counting on is, you know, you're going to get May, you know, you're going to get Williams, you know, you're going to get Daniels, right? So what you're saying to yourself, does Nix and McCarthy, I mean, that's 4. Just, you got McCarthy there, put him in there. So now is Nix or Penix going to be the 5th one? And I think there's a good chance that Nix can go. And I think if you're a team that maybe like what Tennessee tried to do and get back into the first round to get Will Levis, I think that one jumps out at to me. I would play the over 5, the over 4.5. I think that would be the number. I could see 6 going. I'm not saying 6 will be worthy to go, but I could see that. The offensive lineman is kind of the strength of this draft lies in the offensive lineman, in the sense that there's a lot of good, there's a lot of good players kind of in the, you know, in that second round area of offensive linemen, right? So, you know, is there a legitimate left tackle? Yeah, of course there is. You know, certainly Alt could play left tackle. You got Latham, you know, you've got a bunch of different guys. So I think that could push that number to the under, because I think teams would say, okay, I can get another lineman in the second. If I can't get the left tackle, I'll get another lineman in the second. So you have to be kind of careful. Receivers at 6.5, to me, I think I would go under there, because I think the three that are going to go early are, you know, Harrison, Neighbors, and I definitely think that Thomas will go. Now you're dealing with Coleman and you're dealing with Adunze. You got to get him in there. So that's 5. And then where's the 6th one come from?
Yeah,
I don't know where the 6th one comes from.
Michael, yeah, the majority of projections that I'm seeing also have sat there at 6, minus 220 to the under for wide receivers. I'm kind of hoping that some sportsbook will put out a prop of will QBs go 1, 2, 3, 4 for the first time in NFL history, because we have not seen that yet. But, all indications appear that somebody's going to try to trade up for a quarterback, whether it be J.J. McCarthy or whomever is available at that spot in pick 4 or pick 5. Which of those teams between the Cardinals and Chargers do you think is most likely to trade out of their position?
I think the Chargers for sure, because I think what Harbaugh was saying, he's going to take it. He don't want to take a receiver. He doesn't need a quarterback. And I think he'll move down to take an offensive lineman. Look, I think the team that's sneaky. So John Mara, one thing about the owners meetings is you have to analyze what everybody says. John Mara says at the owners meetings, he's not going to block a potential pick at 5 for the, or is it, there's 6. The Giants are at 6 for the Giants at quarterback, if they really feel passionate about the player. Well, and then they're out working out J.J. McCarthy, which fits. McCarthy kind of fits the kind of player the Giants would like. So I think, you know, for all the teams, I think the Giants are another team that's going to pick a quarterback. Just I'm reading the tea leaves with no knowledge, but it seems that way to me.
Yeah, they've had visits with McCarthy and Drake May. We're at Jaden Daniels Pro Day yesterday. The Giants were at May's today. So something we'll monitor. I actually have a follow-up question on that one for you for later on in the show. When we come back, Mike Somich will join us. Time for a little college hoops.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe right now. There are only 2 days left to sign up on our VSiN Pro annual subscription, where you get this deal first year for only $199 instead of our usual $240 price. And all you need to do is use our promo code Lombardi. That gets you VSiN Pro access to everything we do for the whole year, including daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for each and every game, betting systems, premium analysis, 24/7 video access, plus access to our March Madness betting hub, where our guys have picks for each and every game and round of the tournament as it rolls on. Remember, though, this offer expires Friday. Sign up today, VSiN.com/subscribe. Use that promo code Lombardi. First year VSiN Pro access for $199. This is the Lombardi Line. Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you as we welcome in Mike Somich on the Progressive Guest Line, VSiN host of The Handle with Matt Brown every Saturday and Sunday, 9 to 12 Pacific, 12 to 3 Eastern. And what a day. We got MLB opening day. We got Sweet 16 action coming up tonight. How are we feeling about the sports Thursday we have upon us?
Oh, it's a great Thursday. I mean, I love opening day. It's a great day to be able to just sit there and watch some baseball, but it's nice to have, you know, a little college basketball. We got NHL getting in toward the playoffs as well. Some good games there, some good NBA games too. So it's a phenomenal sports Thursday here. And we got the Florida Derby on Sunday too, or Saturday too. So we got a huge horse racing this weekend as well, Stormy.
Well, that's awesome. The Florida Derby. Yeah. I mean, we're getting into racing season, aren't we, Mike? Do you have an early favorite for the Derby, the Kentucky Derby?
Oh, So I've got a couple future bets in pocket right now. Catching Freedom, who won the Louisiana Derby, is a horse that I've liked for a while. Got him at 25-1. He's going to be probably in that 6-8-1 range when they break from the gate. And I'm not impressed with this year's class in the U.S. So keep an eye on a horse named Forever Young, a Japanese horse who's going to be running overseas this weekend. If he wins, he's going to be dangerous in the Kentucky Derby as well.
I want to be forever. Leave it to Mike Somich to bring horse racing to us already right here on the day that the Sweet 16 is tipping off. You're the man. Sama Bomb at his finest. Let's get to the games that we have in action coming up later tonight. Sweet 16 in the East and West getting underway. First game of the day, Clemson and Arizona. One of the bigger favorites we have in the Wildcats here, laying 7.5. Total 152.5. Any action there?
I took a piece of Clemson when it touched 7.5. And that to me was when this number got a little bit too far. I made this game closer to 5 as Arizona's the favorite. And I like this Arizona team. I think Love has been very good. I think they have a good shot at winning the game, but the spread just got too big here. PJ Hall specifically going to have to stay out of foul trouble here for Clemson. If he's able to stay out of foul trouble, I think they have the bodies inside to be able to handle the size of Arizona. And I like the guard play from Clemson as well. It's a team that shoots the three ball very, very well. They're going to want to try and slow this pace down. So lean toward the under as well with Clemson here, but I did take Clemson plus the 7.5.
And where are you? Are you as this Connecticut San Diego State line keeps going up, up and up and up? Are you going to keep betting Connecticut, or are you going to take the points with San Diego State?
I haven't played either side in this game yet, Michael, and I lean towards San Diego State, Stormy. So that's, I guess, good news in that front with the points here at 12. I made this game at 11.5. So I was right around the number when it was originally listed. I do lean toward the under here. It feels like this is going to be a spot where if San Diego State wants to win this game, they have to slow UConn down, have to make this a half court game. And if that's the case, I think 136.5 is a little high. So if I end up with the window with anything in this one, it's going to be the under 136.5.
While the spread might be in question, I don't think anyone out here is calling for the Aztecs to get an upset in this spot, though, Mike, which as much as it pains me physically, I do have a curiosity when it comes to this Huskies team. Who should they be afraid of, if anyone? Like, who is their biggest competition remaining to go back to back this year and winning it all?
Man, that's a great question. I would probably say Houston is the one team that they don't want to face just because Houston is so big and so physical. They've got a senior laden team, very good guard play. They could give UConn trouble if they end up seeing each other in the finals. I think Tennessee could cause some troubles for them as well, simply because it's one of the best defensive teams in the nation. And they've got Dalton Connect who's able to score from anywhere, and they can push the pace offensively and still get back defensively. So for me, it's teams on the other side of the bracket that UConn is more worried about than anyone they could draw before they are in the championship game.
Was there one team that you look at, you say they're undervalued based on the line of these first two games of Thursday and Friday games?
I would say the team that's most undervalued is North Carolina here. I'm surprised they're only laying 4. It seems pretty short in this spot. They were laying 4 last weekend in the round of 32 against Michigan State, and I thought that was short as well. I like what they did in that game. They came out. They didn't play that well early. They were down 10, able to bounce back and really take care of business, end up rolling Michigan State in that game after being down early. Now you come back and you take on an Alabama team, and this is a North Carolina team that is very good offensively, top 10 from a defensive efficiency perspective, and taking on a Bama team that, yeah, Bama can score, but they can't stop anybody. I was surprised that North Carolina didn't get more respect for what they were able to do against Michigan State with a line that kind of felt like it was disrespectful toward North Carolina. So I laid the 4 today with North Carolina against Alabama.
Because of exactly what you mentioned, what's your thought on the total here? 173.5. Alabama can score. They can't stop anybody. But to your point, North Carolina is really strong on defense. So what was your initial thought when you saw that number?
I wouldn't play the under. I don't see Bama slowing this down in any way, shape, or form. They like to chuck threes. So they're going to try and outscore UNC. And I don't love that idea because UNC able to fill it up with them as well. So I think UNC gets theirs. I wouldn't be surprised if this is one of those games that we see played in the 90s. We've already had a couple of those. We saw, that Florida-Colorado game, 102-100. We saw, the A&M Houston game, 95-90. I think that's this style of game. I don't think they need overtime to get there either. So I think there's going to be a lot of points in this spot. I wouldn't play the under. Haven't gotten to the window with the over, but if I was going to play anything, it would be the over in that spot.
We had Harry Gagnon on yesterday, and he got into all his baseball ideas, and he had Shawnee Ohtani as the MVP for the league betting his number. Would you think that's a good play?
Oh, man, it's going to be interesting. The problem with Shohei Ohtani is that, he is going to put up numbers, but now you've got this cloud hanging over him of everything that's come out in the last week or so. We don't know what's going to happen with that. We don't know if at some point there's going to be a suspension or if it's going to affect his play. He's hitting in that lineup, that Dodgers lineup that's absolutely stacked. They've spent over $2 billion now in the 1-4 spots. All of them can hit. All of them are MVP candidates. But I keep looking over at Ronald Acuna Jr. in Atlanta, and I'm not sure that anyone should be the favorite over Acuna Jr. considering what he's done over the last 2 years. He's also in a very good lineup there in Atlanta, and that completely discounts Corbin, who's in Arizona as well. So the MVP market for me, if I'm playing someone, I'm not playing someone at the top of the board. I want to look for a bigger price, and I'm not interested in the 4-1, 5-1, 6-1 type prices. I'm looking for 30, 40-1 so that I can make that ticket valuable later in the season. Even if they don't win, I can find a way to monetize it. And to me, you can't really monetize a Shohei Ohtani ticket. And with everything that's hanging over him right now, I don't want to get involved in that market.
With horse racing, we talk about the horses' names being so fun and interesting. I don't know if I have a more interesting, to me at least personally, baseball name than just saying Ronald Acuna Jr. It's like my favorite thing to say, the way it rolls off so natural and so smooth. Do you have any futures that you really love for MLB season or even opening day plays today that you're interested in?
So I've got a couple futures in the market. You sounded very New Jersey there, Stormy,
Ronald
when you said
Acuna
that.
Ronald Acuna Jr. Yeah, there we go.
That was very, very Jersey of you. I'm playing the Royals today, +110. They're taking on the Twins. Reagan's going to be on the mound for the Royals. He is like a lefty version of DeGrom. The numbers that he's been able to put up in spring training have been absolutely phenomenal. He's been a hot Cy Young sleeper candidate. I really like this Royals team. Their win total was sitting at 72.5 when I played the over on the win total. Got them an 8.5-1 to win the AL Central as well. I think it's a very bad division, and the Royals are a team that are on the rise, no one really talking about right now. So like the Royals today, took them +110. I like them to win the division at +850. And my other opening day bet here, I took the Orioles first five -0.5 run, -120. This Orioles team is going to be a truck. They are going to be very, very, very good this year. They picked up Corbin Burns, who's been a hot sleeper candidates for the AL Cy Young as well. He's going to be on top of that rotation, and they 1-9 can hit the baseball. So I expect good things from the Orioles as well. So laid the half run in the first five with them here against the Angels today. And it's an Angels lineup that they're just not good. You can see once they lost Shohei Ohtani, they've got Trout. We'll see how healthy he's going to be this season. This is going to be a bad year for the Angels. I think we can take advantage of it day one here playing the Orioles.
You wonder how Trout, the Angels have had Ohtani, they have Trout, they have all this, how long is he going to keep staying in there and lose? Like, wouldn't they be better off, Mike, I know he's one of the best players and I'm a huge fan of his, but wouldn't they be better off trying to collect more pieces than just to have one player?
This is an all-time mess up by the Angels front office. When you look at this and you have Ohtani, you have Trout, two of the best players of a generation, and one of them just walked. And you got absolutely nothing for him. And I was banging the drum that you needed to trade him at the deadline last year because you need to retool the franchise. And then Trout, it feels like he just likes it in Anaheim because he has had opportunities to be able to leave that franchise. And they've had opportunities to move on from him. And neither's happened. You got to think at some point the Angels trade him. But it's like trading someone who's 2 years, 3 years past their prime, Michael. You do that in the NFL, you're getting peanuts back for what you should have gotten, what you could have gotten a couple years ago. I'm not going to say the Brent Burns scenario where they could have gotten two firsters in Carolina and end up with a second and a fifth, but you could have gotten so much more for him 4 or 5 years ago. And once you lose him and you lose Ohtani for next to nothing, it sets your franchise back. You got to figure out how can you rebuild without having those key pieces to build around.
Mike, enjoy the action today. Thanks for joining us.
No problem.
Thanks,
have a good
Appreciate
weekend.
You.
And Mike will be right back with us next week as well. Same time, same place. Also, in case you missed it, here at Circa, we had a couple of Hall of Famers out here throwing a ceremonial opening day pitch. Greg Maddux, Frank Thomas. Frank Thomas is actually behind the bar over here right now at the Sportsbook. Not too shabby. We'll be right back talking a few NFL season win totals. Gridiron Goldilocks is next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Never a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DraftKings customers. You can earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager, up to $2,500 in bonus bets your first 3 days on the app. Don't wait. Download the DraftKings app now and use our code Lombardi when you sign up. That'll earn you a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager right now. Time for our daily edition of Gridiron Goldilocks as we go through some NFL season win totals that have been posted on DraftKings. And Michael, we're going to have you continue to determine whether these numbers are too high, too low, or just right for certain teams. And today we're looking at teams in which the market does not think are winning teams, does not think are playoff contenders. So which of these teams could potentially prove odds makers wrong and have a breakout season like the Texans maybe had a season ago, or which one teams are actually much worse maybe than the odds would indicate. Let's start in the NFC South with the New Orleans Saints. 2023 was not exactly what this team envisioned. They had all this hype around bringing in Derek Carr, did not pan out, end up 9-8, missed the playoffs in a weak NFC South. Clint Kubiak comes over though from San Francisco to retool that offense in 2024. Their win total, Michael, set at 7.5. Too high, too low, or just right?
I think it's just right. Now, the South plays the AFC West, right? So they play the Chiefs, the Chargers, you know, and they play those teams there, you know, on the road. So you got that situation going for you, which could lend itself. You know, if you get a good relationship there with Denver or the Raiders, you might pick up a winner here or there. But they played good defense last year, and especially as the year went on, they played really effectively. So I think 7.5 is perfect. I could see them getting to 9. Could I see them getting to 10? No. But I think it's perfectly situated there because I think ultimately, you know, they're going to have to prove they can protect up front. You know, they haven't really been able to handle that. The situation at tackle, Pete's still a free agent for them. They haven't been able to figure that one out. So, you know, whether they bring him back or don't bring him back, James Hurst isn't very good at left tackle. They have a lot of situation in their offensive line, which is where they put some resources, Stormy, but they haven't been able to get that handled to the level they need to get it handled. So I think it's just right, 7.5. I lean towards the over here.
And there is a little slight juice to the over -120. The Saints are third on the odds board for the NFC South at +380 behind the odds on favorite Falcons and defending division champions in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Let's head out to the NFC West. The Seattle Seahawks will start a season without Pete Carroll as their head coach for the first time since 2010. In steps former Ravens defensive coordinator Mike McDonald. Geno Smith took a step back this past season. Tough division with the 49ers, who are the Super Bowl favorite right now. The Rams, who we talked about yesterday as a team that has a chance to be competitive in the division. 7.5, their total as well. Too high, too low, just right.
Well, I think it's a little, to me, I think they're going to get better. I really do. I think it's too low. I think Seattle's a sleeper team. They're going to improve defensively. And I think, you know, they've lost some guys in the free agency and people are making a big deal out of it. I'm not sure it is. They're very talented offensively. Their offensive line last year, they lost both their tackles for an extended period of time. Cross and Lucas, the right tackle, Lucas, Cross, the left tackle. They're really good. The running backs are good. If Geno can do what he did 2 years ago, I think they're going to be really good offensively. And McDonald coaching them on defense, you know, I think it gives them a hell of an opportunity to improve. And when you look at their schedule, right? So I think you got to see what they do, right? They play the AFC East, so they have the Jets and New England away, and they have Miami and Buffalo at home. So they got an opportunity to get the harder teams to play them at home, which is certainly a good thing to do. And I think you can find a way to win 8 games here. I kind of like them as a sleeper team because I think McDonald's will be a good coach, and I think they're going to play better defense. They can't play worse defense than they did last year, and it's been that way in Seattle. They have to regain a home field advantage.
A lot of familiar faces from that defense no longer on the team either, so Mike McDonald and his expertise will be important. As far as the playoff number goes, Seattle +200. They're 7-1 in the NFC West. Now, the Minnesota Vikings, Michael, I still am a sore loser about. I have a lot of feelings about how this team did me dirty with their season win total last year. It was 8.5.
Taking it personally, of course you are. Yes.
Michael, they were 6-4. 6-4 with 7 games to go. And could not get me 9 wins. They even got 2 wins with Josh Dobbs and still couldn't get there. So they go 1-6 down the stretch. Longest shot in the NFC North now going into 2022. Kirk Cousins obviously moving on to Atlanta. Their win total is only 6.5 this season. So, you know, what would have gotten there last year. Thanks for that. 6.5, juice to the over though at -135. Too high, too low, or just right?
Well, it's just right now because they don't have a quarterback on their team, right? They have Sam Darnold. So, and they play the, here's the thing that you got to be careful here. They play the AFC South. How good is the AFC South? Right. So, you know, when you, whoever, I think one of the things you have to look at in the win totals is what's the division that the team plays that is, could be considered the weakest division, right? Where you think you could pick up some wins. All right. And like when we just talked about Seattle, Seattle gets to play, they have to go to New England and they have to go to the Jets. Not as bad as you would think because they get Miami a harder game to play and they get Buffalo a harder game to play at home. Well, when you look at Minnesota, Minnesota has to play the AFC. They have to play the AFC South. They get the Texans at home and they get the Colts, probably two of the better teams in the division. Now they have to go to Jacksonville and they have to go to Tennessee. But those are winnable, and I think 6.5 might be a little low, Stormy. Even with Darnold at quarterback, if they get a rookie in there and they play, I think they're better on defense. They play at a place that's hard to play in that dome stadium. I know they did you dirty, and they had a chance to win. One of those wins was a 3-0 victory over the Raiders, which is still one of the most remarkable games you're ever going to watch in your life. But I think ultimately they should be a 7-win team. They're not that – if they get any play out of their quarterback –
yeah, I'm with you there. And again, yeah, Sam Darnold on a 1-year bridge deal. J.J. McCarthy to go to the Vikings -105 on DraftKings Sportsbook right now, that number. And on defense, to your point, they did get better while Danielle Hunter is out, Jonathan Greenard and Andrew Van Ginkle in. How about the Washington Commanders, who are coming off a 4-win season, had the worst defense in the league, allowing over 30 points per game. Ron Rivera out, Dan Quinn in. They, too, are in the market for a quarterback with that number 2 overall pick. The season win total set at 6.5, also -135 to the over. Do you think that's too high, too low, or just right?
Well, I think this. They play the AFC. They play the AFC East, the North. I'm sorry. They play Cleveland and Pittsburgh, and they play Baltimore and Cincy. They play Baltimore and Cincy on the road. Two hard games. And then they play, and then they have the AFC, the NFC South. They play Atlanta at home, they play Carolina at home, and they go on the road for New Orleans and Tampa. Again, their road schedule is fairly tough, but they have to be better than last year. They've signed a multitude of players. They're going to get better quarterbacking. I can't imagine they honestly believe that they're going to start Mariota at quarterback, knowing that he can't stay healthy. And they gave away Sam Howell, which I find ridiculous because I've asked a lot of people, what's the difference between Sam Howell and Bo Nix? What's the difference between Sam Howell and McCarthy? Like when you're watching these guys play, right? Sam Howell threw for a lot of yards. He got the crap beat out of him. But how much difference is there? One's new and one's been used, so you don't ever want the used car, right? And the new car always looks shinier. But to me, Howell was a great get for Seattle. I think he was. If they can rehabilitate him in terms of taking the hits, Washington's very dangerous with Mariota and a rookie. So I think the numbers set perfectly. I lean towards the over because they have to get better with Kingsbury, with Quinn, and a new defensive staff.
Again, that number 2 overall pick they hold right now, Jaden Daniels, a -120 favorite, Drake May, +125, and all the movement on J.J. McCarthy, +275. With the Las Vegas Raiders, undeniable sense of optimism from Raiders fans about Antonio Pierce, the addition of Christian Wilkins to play opposite Max Crosby. They signed Garner Minshew, although Aiden O'Connell has earned the right to compete for the job. Okay, season win total 6.5, Michael. Too high, too low, or just right for this Vegas team?
I think it's just right. I mean, all the teams that don't have quarterbacks are set at 6.5, right? Now, Minshew won 9 games with the Colts. Can the Raiders play as well as the Colts did in all the elements? They don't have Josh Jacobs. I think that one hurts. But, you know, they're going to have to figure out that, and they're going to have to figure out the quarterback situation in the long term. But when you give $15 million, you know, it's tough. Now, they beat the Broncos twice last year. Can they do that again? They beat the Chargers once last year. Can they do that again? I think the Chargers are going to be better coached. So I would lean towards I think the number's perfectly set. If I leaned anywhere, it would be to the 6. I don't see how they're going. I know there's a ton of optimism around the Raiders, and people are carrying that momentum. But there's a momentum when you have a change of coaches, and then the next year, how does it all work out? We'll see.
Michael, the Cardinals and Giants are both also 6.5 win totals. They do technically have quarterbacks. So what's that say about them?
Yeah. Isn't that ironic? Isn't that amazing, right?
We got to hit the break here. We'll be right back with hour two of the Lombardi Line. Latest odds on the four-game slate in the Sweet 16 and what's on Michael's mind. We'll be right back.